The desire body, which we sense as our emotional nature, is always seeking something new. This desire for change of condition, change of scene, change of mood, love of emotion and sensation is due to the activities of the desire body, which is like the sea in a storm, full of waves, tossing hither and thither, at random and without design, each one powerful and destructive when unbridled and without allegiance to the central directing power. The mind, indeed, is the focus through which the spirit endeavors to subdue the lower personality and guide it according to the ability acquired during its evolutionary period. But at the present time it is so vague a quantity that among the great majority of people it cannot be reckoned with, and they are therefore led principally by their feelings and emotions, without much amenability to reason and thought. Recognizing the great and wonderful power of the emotional body and its amenability to rhythm, which may be said to be its keynote, progressive theology has addressed itself to and focused its efforts upon appeals to this vehicle. It is this part of our nature which enjoys the entertainment of the sensational vaudeville pastor. This vehicle it is that sways and groans under the rhythmic rant of the revivalist, itself vibrant with emotion, rising and falling in the well-calculated measure of the speaker's voice. Unity of pitch is soon established, a state of actual hypnosis where the victim can no more help going to mourner's bench than water can refrain from running downhill. They realize powerfully for the time being the enormity of their sins and they are equally anxious to start a better life. Alas, however, the next wave of attraction to their emotional nature washes away all the preacher has said, as well as their resolutions, and they stand exactly where they were before, much to the chagrin and sorrow of the evangelist concerned. Thus all efforts to elevate humanity by work upon the unstable desire body are and must always prove futile. This the occult schools of all ages have recognized and they have therefore addressed themselves to the changing of the vital body by working with its keynote, which is repetition. Chapter 3, Preparation for the Higher Life. The expression, prepared the earth, means that all evolution on a planet is accompanied by the evolution of that planet itself. Had some observer gifted with spiritual sight watched the evolution of our Earth from some distant star, he would have noticed a gradual change taking place in the Earth's desire body. Under the old dispensation the desire bodies of people in general were improved by means of the law. This work is still going on in the majority of people, who are thus preparing themselves for the higher life. The group spirit works upon animals through their desire bodies, calling up pictures which give to the animal a feeling and a suggestion of what it must do. Likewise, the allegorical pictures, which are contained in myths, laid the foundation in man for his present and future development. Subconsciously these myths worked upon him and brought him to the stage where he is today. Without that preparation he would have been unable to accomplish that work which he is now doing. The ego has several instruments, a dense body, a vital body, a desire body, and a mind. These are its tools and upon their quality and condition depends how much or how little it can accomplish in its work of gathering experience in each life. If the instruments are poor and dull there will be little spiritual growth and the life will be a barren one, so far as the spirit is concerned. If strict attention is paid to hygiene and diet, the dense body is the one principally affected. But at the same time there is also an effect on the vital body and because, as purer and better materials are built into the dense body, the particles are enveloped in purer planetary ether and desire stuff also. Therefore, the planetary parts of the vital and desire bodies become purer. If attention is paid to food and hygiene only, the personal vital and desire bodies may remain almost as impure as before. But it has become just a little easier to get into touch with the good than if gross food were used. No matter what people say to us or about us, their words have no intrinsic power to hurt, it is our own mental attitude towards their utterances which determines the effect of their words upon us for good or ill. Paul, when facing persecution and slander, testified that none of these things move me. All who hope to advance spiritually must cultivate equipoise. For without it the desire body will either run riot or congeal, According to the nature of the emotions generated by intercourse with others, whether worry, anger, or fear, we know that the dense body is our vehicle of action, that the vital body gives it the power to act, that furnishes the incentive to action, and that the mind was given as a brake on impulse. We learn from the Cosmic Conception, pages 89-91, that thought forms from within and without the body are being continually projected upon in an endeavor to arouse feeling which will lead to action, and that reason ought to rule the lower nature and leave there higher self scope for expression of its divine proclivities. We also know that habitual thought has power to mold even physical matter, for the nature of the sensualist is plainly discernible in his features, which are as coarse and gross as the features of the spiritually minded are delicate and fine. The power of thought is still greater in its potency to mold the finer vestures. We have already seen how thoughts of fear and worry congeal of anyone who indulges in that habit, and it is equally certain that by cultivating an optimistic frame of mind under all circumstances we can attune our desire bodies to any key we wish. After a time, that will become a habit. It must be confessed that it is difficult to hold down to any definite lines, but it can be done, and the attempt must be made by all who aspire to spiritual advancement. We have created a subtle aura about us under the guardianship of the divine hierarchies reigning over the seven planets: Saturn, Sun, Moon, Mars, Mercury, Jupiter, and Venus. The universe, or great world, is mystically called the seven-stringed lyre of Apollo. Our individual organism or microcosm is a replica or image of God, and it behooves us to awaken in ourselves an echo of this music of the spheres. Most of us have learned to respond too much to saturnine vibrations of sorrow, gloom, fear, and worry, which congeal our desire bodies, and it would be to the lasting benefit of all to try to cultivate the spiritual vibrations of the sun, filling our lives with optimism and sunshine which will dispel the saturnine gloom and despondency and prevent such thoughts entering our aura in the future. The prime necessity of advancement is equipoise. All who aspire ought to adopt Paul's motto, "None of these things move me." It is a proof of the benefit of religion that it makes people happy, but the greatest happiness is usually too deep for outward expression. It fills our whole being so full that it is almost awesome, and a boisterous manner never goes together with that true happiness, for it is the sign of superficiality. The loud voice, the coarse laugh, the noisy manner, the hard heels that sound like sledgehammers, the slamming of doors, and the rattling of dishes are the signatures of the unregenerate, for they love noise, the more the merrier, as it stirs their desire bodies. For their purpose church music is anathema, a blaring brass band is preferable to any other form of entertainment, and the wilder the dance, the better. But it is otherwise, or should be, with the aspirant to the higher life. As proper food feeds the body in a material sense, so the activity of the spirit in the dense body, which results in right action, promotes the growth of the conscious soul. As the forces from the sun play in the vital body and nourish it, that it may act on the dense body, so the memory of actions done in the dense body, the desires, feelings, and emotions of the desire body, and the thoughts and ideas in the mind, cause the growth of the intellectual soul. In like manner, the highest desires and emotions of form the emotional soul. The emotional soul, which is the extract of the desire body, adds to the efficiency of the human spirit, which is the spiritual counterpart of the desire body. Having been exiled from the Garden of Eden, their etheric region, by learning to know the material world, in consequence of repeated sexual abuse which has focused his attention here, this increased use of hardened the dense body and it began to require food and shelter. Thus man's ingenuity was taxed to provide for the body. Hunger and cold were whips of evil that called forth man's ingenuity, they forced him to think and act to provide for his necessities. Thus he is gradually learning wisdom, he provides for these contingencies before they come, because the pangs of hunger and cold have taught him to guard himself. Thus wisdom is crystallized pain. Our sorrows, when they are past, and we can calmly view them and extract the lessons they contained, our minds of wisdom, and are the wombs of future joys, for by them we learn to order our lives aright. We learn to cease from sin, for ignorance is sin and the only sin, and applied knowledge is salvation, and the only salvation. That seems a broad statement, but if we try it out in thought it will be found to be as absolutely true and capable of demonstration as the fact that 2 × 2 = 4. The vital body aims to build the physical, whereas our desires and emotions tear down. It is the struggle between the vital body and which produces consciousness in the physical world, and which hardens the tissues so that the soft body of the child gradually becomes tough and shrunken in old age, followed by death. The morality or immorality of our desires and emotions acts in a similar manner on the vital body. Where devotion to high ideals is the mainspring of action, where the devotional nature has been allowed for years to express itself freely and frequently, and particularly where this has been accompanied by the scientific exercises given probationers in the Rosicrucian Fellowship, the quantity of the chemical and life ethers gradually diminishes as the animal appetites vanish, and an increased amount of the light and reflecting ether takes their place. As a consequence, physical health is not as robust among people who follow the higher path as among people whose indulgence of the lower nature attracts the chemical and life ethers, in proportion to the extent and nature of their vice, to the partial or total exclusion of the two higher ethers. When a man passes out at death, he takes with him the mind, desire body, and vital body, the latter being the storehouse of the pictures of his past life. During the 3½ days following death, these pictures are etched into to form the basis of the man's life in purgatory and the first heaven, where the evil is expurgated and the good assimilated. The experience of the life itself is forgotten, as we have forgotten the process of learning to write, but have retained the faculty. So the cumulative extract of all his experiences, both during past earth lives and past existences in purgatory and the various heavens, are retained by the man and form his stock in trade in the next birth. The pains he has sustained speak to him as the voice of conscience, the good he has done gives him a more and more altruistic character. As the scenes in the life a panorama which unrolls before the eyes of the ego after death, cause a suffering in purgatory which cleanses the soul from a desire to repeat the offences which generated those pictures, so the salt wherewith the sacrifices upon the altar of burnt offerings in the tabernacle in the wilderness were rubbed before being placed before the altar, and the fire wherewith they were consumed symbolized a double fiery pain similar to that felt by the ego in purgatory. Confident in the hermetic axiom, as above, so below, they evolved the method of retrospection as being in harmony with the cosmic laws of soul growth, and capable of accomplishing day by day that which the purgatorial experience does only once in a lifetime, namely, cleansing the soul from sin by the fire of remorse. In purgatory, the cleansing process is accomplished by the centrifugal force of repulsion which tugs and tears the desire stuff, in which the picture is formed over its matrix of ether, out of the desire body. At that particular time the ego suffers as it made others suffer, because of a singular condition in the lower regions of the desire world where purgatory is located. Some seers who are unable to contact the higher regions speak of the desire world as illusory, and they are right so far as the lower regions are concerned, for there all things appear reversed as we see them in a glass. This peculiarity is not purposeless, nothing in God's kingdom is, all things serve a wise end. This reversal places the erring soul in the position of its victim, so that when a scene unrolls on the screen of its past life where it did a wrong to someone, the ego does not stand as a mere spectator and see the scene reenacted, but it becomes, for the time being, the victim of the wrong and it feels the pain felt by that wronged one. For the centrifugal force of repulsion exerted to tear the picture from of the wrongdoer must at least equal the hate and anger of the victim which impressed the picture upon the seed atom at the time of occurrence. During retrospection, the aspirant endeavors to imitate these conditions, He tries to visualize the scenes where he did something wrong, and the remorse he endeavors to feel must at least equal the resentment felt by whomever he wronged. It then has the same effect of expunging the record of the injury as does the centrifugal force of repulsion, which accomplishes the eradication of evil in purgatory for the purpose of extracting therefrom the quality of the soul which we know as conscience, and which acts as a deterrent in hours of temptation. Thus used, the emotion of remorse cleanses and purifies the desire body of weeds and tares, leaving the soil free and fostering the growth of manifold virtues that blossom into spiritual advancement and bring greater opportunities for service in the Master's vineyard. But as the force latent in gunpowder and kindred explosive substances may be used to further the greatest objects of civilization or to outdo the most savage acts of barbarism, so also, this emotion of remorse may be misused in such a manner that it becomes a detriment and a hindrance to the ego instead of a help. When we indulge in remorse daily and hourly, we are actually wasting a great power which might be used for the most noble ends of life, for the constant indulgence of regret affects in a manner similar to that which follows excessive bailing of the physical body. As above, so below, and as below, so above, says the Hermetic aphorism, enunciating thereby the great law of analogy which is the master key to all mysteries. When we use the centrifugal force of remorse to eradicate the acts of evil from our hearts during the evening exercise of retrospection, the effect is similar to the action of the water which removes the miasmatic poisoned ether from our vital bodies during the bath, and thus leaves room for an influx of pure health-promoting ether. After we have burned out the wrongdoings in the sacrificial fire of remorse, the poisonous substance thus eradicated leaves room for the influx of desire stuff which is morally healthier and better soil for noble deeds. The more thoroughly we are purged by this remorse, the greater the vacuum produced and the better the grade of new material we attract to our subtler vehicles. But, on the other hand, if we indulge in regrets and remorse during every waking hour as some do, we are outdoing purgatory, for though the time there is spent in eradication of evil, the consciousness turns from each picture when it has been torn out by the force of repulsion. Here, because of the interlocking of the desire and vital bodies, we are enabled to revivify the picture in memory as often as we please, and while is gradually dissolved in purgatory by the expurgation of the panorama of life, a certain small amount is added while we are living in the physical world, to take the place of that which is ejected by remorse. Thus, remorse and regret when continually indulged in have the same effect on the desire body as excessive bailing is on the vital body. Both vehicles are depleted of strength by excessive cleansing, and for that reason it is as dangerous to the moral and spiritual health to indulge indiscriminately in feelings of regret and remorse as it is fatal to the physical well-being to bathe too much. Discrimination should govern in both cases. As a vampire sucks the ether from the vital body of its victims and feeds upon it, so perpetual thoughts of regret and remorse concerning certain things become a desire elemental which acts as a vampire and draws the very life from the poor soul who has shaped it, and by the attraction of like for like, it fosters continuance of this morbid habit of regret. If, by continual prayer, we obtain forgiveness for the injuries we have inflicted upon others and if we make all the restitution possible, purify our vital bodies forgiving those who have wronged us, and eliminate all ill feeling, we save ourselves much post-mortem misery, besides preparing the way for universal brotherhood, which is particularly dependent upon the victory of the vital body over the desire body. In the form of memory, the desire body impresses upon the vital body the idea of revenge. An even temper amid the various annoyances of daily life indicates such a victory, therefore the aspirant should cultivate control of the temper, as it includes work on both bodies. The Lord's Prayer includes this also, for when we see that we are injuring others, we look about and try to find the cause. Loss of temper is one of the causes and it originates in the desire body. Most people leave physical life with the same temperament they bring into it, but the aspirant must systematically conquer all attempts of to assumed mastery. That can be done by concentration upon high ideals, which strengthens the vital body and is much more efficacious than the common prayers of the church. The occult scientist chooses concentration in preference to prayer, because the former is accomplished by the aid of the mind, which is cold and unfeeling, whereas prayer is usually dictated by emotion. Where it is dictated by a pure unselfish devotion to high ideals, prayer is much higher than cold concentration. It can never be cold, but bears upon the pinions of love the outpourings of the mystic to the deity. The prayer for is, lead us not into temptation. Desire is the great tempter of mankind. It is the great incentive to all action, and insofar as the actions subserve the purposes of the spirit, it is good, but where the desire is for something degrading, something that debases the nature, it is indeed meet that we pray not to be led into temptation. Lead us not into temptation is the prayer for the desire body, which is the storehouse of energy, and furnishes incentive to action through desire. An Oriental maxim says, kill out desire, and the Orientals furnish good examples of the indolence resultant upon attempt to do that. Kill out your temper is the foolish admonition sometimes given those who lose their temper. Desire or temper is a valuable asset, too valuable to be stunted or killed. The man without desire is like steel devoid of temper, of no account. In Revelation, while the six churches are praised, the seventh is utterly anathematized for being neither hot nor cold, a wishy-washy community. The greater the sinner, the greater the saint is a true adage, for it takes energy to sin, and when that energy is turned in the right direction, it is as much of a power for good as previously it was for evil. A man may be good because he cannot summon up sufficient energy to be bad, then he is so good that he is good for nothing, like the Nilatins. While we are weak, our desire nature masters us and may lead us into temptation. But as we learn to control our desire nature, our temper, we may guide it in harmony with the laws of God in man. The lowest aspect of the spirit, the human spirit, next offers its petition to the lowest aspect of deity for the highest of the threefold bodies, the desire body, lead us not into temptation. When death has taken place and man finds himself in the desire world, the magnetic powers of the seed atom are spent, the archetype is dissolving, and therefore the centrifugal force of repulsion forces the desire stuff of the desire body outward toward its periphery. The matter belonging to the lower regions is thrown off first by the process of purgation, which cleanses the man from all evil acts of his past life. This is the result of the same natural law that in the physical world causes a sun to throw off matter which then becomes planets. To interfere with this law would be disastrous to any human being, even supposing it were possible, which it is not. So it is useless to attempt to help anyone in that manner. It is different with the initiate who goes to the desire world during life. Then the seed atom of form's natural center of attraction, or gravitation, which holds the desire stuff in that vehicle to accustomed lines. Also it is different with anyone who performs the scientific exercises given in the mystery schools. Such a person is constantly purging his desire body of the coarser matters so that at death he is not affected to the same degree by the centrifugal force of repulsion as those who have not had this training. But there is another way in which we may help someone near and dear to us, provided we have his cooperation. To make this clear, it is necessary to mention first that the coarser the desire stuff in the desire body, the more tenacious is its hold upon a man. Therefore expurgation by the force of repulsion causes great pain, and that is what we feel in the purgatorial experience. If we were perfectly willing to let go and acknowledge our faults when the pictures of them appear in the life a panorama, instead of trying to make excuses for ourselves or being stirred anew by the anger and hate of the past, then it would involve much less pain to eradicate them from our desire body. If this fact can be impressed on one whom we are anxious to help, if we can get him into the state of mind where he is willing to acknowledge his wrongs and mistakes from the very bottom of his heart, then the process of purgation will be both shorter and less painful, and he will rise to the higher regions where the force of attraction holds sway in a much shorter time than otherwise. The same result can be accomplished by prayer, also by kind thoughts, thoughts of upliftment and helpfulness, for these have the same effect on those who are out of the body as kind words and helpful acts have on people who live in this world. Devotion to high ideals is a curb on the animal instincts, and generates and evolves the emotional soul. Cultivation of the faculty of devotion is very essential. In some people this is the line of least resistance, and they are apartment to become mystic dreamers, the energies of the desire. Body are then expressed as enthusiasm and religious ecstasy. There are also some people who develop abnormally the faculty of discrimination, which leads along cold intellectual lines of metaphysical speculation. In either case there is a lack of balance, a danger. The mystic dreamer, because dominated by emotion, may become subject to all sorts of illusion. That, the intellectual occultist will never do, but he may end in black magic if he pursues the path of knowledge for the sake of knowledge and not for service. The only safe way is to develop both head and heart. Since this ancient time, time of Hiram Abiff, the lunar angels have taken charge principally of the moist, aqueous vital body composed of the four ethers, and concerned in the propagation and nourishment of the species, while the Lucifer spirits are singularly active in the dry and fiery desire vehicles. The function of the vital body is to build and sustain the dense body, while that of involved destruction of the tissues. Thus, there is a constant war going on between the desire and vital bodies, and it is this war in heaven that causes our physical consciousness on earth. Through many lives we have worked in every age and clime, and from each life we have extracted a certain amount of experience, garnered and stored as vibratory power in the seed atoms of our various vehicles. Thus, each of us is a builder, building the temple of the immortal spirit without sound of hammer. Each one is a Hiram Abiff, gathering material for soul growth and throwing it into the furnace of his life experience, that to be worked upon by the fire and passion of desire. It is being slowly but surely melted, the dross is being purged in every purgatorial experience and the quintessence of soul growth is being extracted through many lives. Every one of us is thus preparing for initiation, preparing whether we know it or not, learning to blend the fiery passions with the softer, gentler emotions. The new hammer or gavel wherewith the master workman rules his subordinates is now a cross of sorrow, and the new word is self-control. This desire nature has since evolved, the fiery, martial substratum of passion and the aqueous lunar basis of emotion have become capable of numerous combinations. As thought furrows the brain into convolutions and the face into lines, so have the passions, desires, and emotions marshaled the mobile desire stuff into curved lines and whirls, eddies, rapids, and whirlpools, resembling a mountain torrent at the time when it is at its greatest disturbance. It is seldom ever at even comparative rest. This desire stuff has, in successive periods of its evolution, become responsive to one after another of the seven planetary vibrations emanating from the Sun, Venus, Mercury, Moon, Saturn, Jupiter, and Mars. Each individual desire body has, during that time, been woven into a unique pattern, and as the shuttle of fate flies back and forth unceasingly upon the loom of destiny, this pattern is being enlarged upon, embellished, and beautiful, though we may not perceive it. As the weaver always does his work on the reverse side of his tapestry, so are we also weaving without fully understanding the ultimate design or seeing the sublime beauty thereof, because it is yet on the side away from us, the hidden side of nature. Anything happening in the physical world is reflected in all the other realms of nature and, as we have seen, builds its appropriate form in the desire world. When a true account of the occurrence is given, another form is built, exactly like the first. They are then drawn together and coalesce, strengthening each other. If, however, an untrue account is given, a form different from and antagonistic to the first, or true one, is created. As they deal with the same occurrence, they are drawn together, but as their vibrations are different they act upon each other with mutual destructiveness. Therefore, evil and malicious lies can kill anything that is good, if they are strong enough and repeated often enough. But, conversely, seeking for the good in evil will, in time, transmute the evil into good. If the form that is built to minimize the evil is weak, it will have no effect and will be destroyed by the evil form, but if it is strong and frequently repeated, it will have the effect of disintegrating the evil and substituting the good. That effect, be it distinctly understood, is not brought about by lying, nor denying the evil, but by looking for the good.